Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from thousands of successful individuals from around the world. I'm your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm delighted to welcome a very accomplished and respected coach from Oxford, UK, Mr. Nicholas Witherick. Nicholas, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Nicholas is the director and founder of Eagle Transformational Coaching. So, Nicholas, before we talk about coaching, tell me about your journey in brief and how has your approach to coaching leaders evolved over the years?
Fantastic. Well, it's a pleasure to be here joining you. And I think your influence and your reach is clearly incredible. So it's a privilege to be on this platform. Thank you. I spent 10 years teaching philosophy and ethics. In schools in the UK, in London and outside of London. And I loved teaching, but it was a little bit too cyclical for me. It was the beginning of every September, you sort of flick your planner back and start this whole cycle again. But I loved teaching philosophy and ethics. And after that, I left teaching and worked in the heritage and cultural sector. Mm-hmm. So I worked for a huge charity in the UK. And then I joined the Victoria and Albert Museum in London and worked there as estate manager for 9 years.
Wow.
And COVID hit and I left the V&A, and I wanted to do something that was people orientated, people focused. And I've loved the role of leadership in the world generally. And I wanted to get involved in a practical action to creating good leaders. So I founded Eagle Transformational Coaching, and I set it up really because I think there's this niche in leadership that often is perceived to be very elite and very teachable and very a qualified role in life. And one of the unique aspects of Eagle Transformational Coaching is to say that, listen, leadership is actually quite accessible to everybody, but you need to understand what your motivation for leadership is. And you need to understand what sort of personality, what sort of person you are in life generally. And I started out sort of almost shouting the desert for the first 6 or 7 months. And two and a half years on, Eagle Transformation is flat out. We're flat out with people aspiring to be leaders or currently leaders trying to flex and morph in this very changing world. So I'm loving it. I wished I'd done it 10 years ago, 15 years ago. But yeah, it's a great place to be at the moment.
Fascinating. So, can all people be leaders? And what are some of the key traits or skills that make this possible?
Do you know, I believe that all people can be leaders. Mm-hmm. It's a very divisive subject, I think. People, everyone listening to this or watching this will know that they can experience leadership from people who are completely unsuited to be leaders. Mm-hmm. And we often award leadership with longevity of service or with high impact or with large salary or with size of corporation. But actually leadership comes in the much more smaller, intimate aspects of our lives. Everybody leads in some aspect of their life. One leads our own discipline in getting out of bed and showering. We lead as a husband, a father, a brother, a daughter, a sister. And once we tap into those skills of leadership and we learn how to transpose those from those little areas of our life into the workplace, yes, everyone can be a leader.
Fascinating. And what are some of the common misconceptions about leadership that you have come across in all the work that you're doing with leaders?
There are thousands of them. I think biggest misconception about leadership is that leadership is primarily power. And leadership is not primarily power. Power comes with leadership. Of course it does. But power in itself is actually impact. Power actually means influence. Power actually means transparency. Power actually means collaboration. So when we say leadership is powerful, yes, leadership is powerful, but not in a micro silo sort of way. You know, power is disguised in many ways. You know, I called my company Eagle Transformational Coaching because the eagle stands for five things: empowerment, acquisition, growth, launch, and evolution. And if we learn to manage those five things, then leadership can become very influential and very powerful.
Well said. And I love the acronym for Eagle. That's wonderful. My next question, Nicholas, is how do different backgrounds and experiences contribute to diverse leadership styles?
I think, you know, one of the reasons that coaches, mentors, leadership consultants are so busy at the moment, partly because there is, you know, I'd be wrong to say there isn't a fashionable trend happening with, around mentoring and coaching. But I think, you know, people are struggling to find really good examples of leadership. It's so easy to become one of these people that stands at the water cooler moaning about authority. We do it apathetically as a nation, particularly in the UK. We moan about government, we moan about politics and the three parties, we moan about royalty, we moan about celebrities. As soon as somebody's a celebrity, we want to pull them down and surround them in scandal and misery. And you know, we have to make a conscious effort to find wholesome, inspiring examples of leadership. So I encourage people, look at what you're reading in newspapers. Look at what you're listening to on the radio. Look at what your Netflix history is about. Look what your Google history is about. Because what we anchor ourselves in through osmosis becomes the essence of, you know, our leadership. So it's very fashionable to take that low morale because it's easy. It's a lot easier to shout from a sedentary position about how miserable leadership is. It's a lot more difficult to say, actually, I'm going to buck the trend. So the bad examples of leadership are, you know, the three things that I always say bad leaders end up doing is they say, I'm going to do it myself. It's easier to do it myself.
Yep.
And that's not leadership. Then they say, I'm the boss. I'm going to show you what to do. I'm going to order you what to do. Otherwise, there's going to be consequences. Dictatorship. And that's terrible. The third one is I'm going to micromanage. I'm going to pretend that you. I'm going to give you autonomy, but actually I'm going to manage every single thing you do. And they're the three worst things that I encounter. You know, people say to me, I'm struggling to retain staff. Well, there's a lot around that. Why is that? You know, I'm struggling to maintain morale. Well, there's a lot around morale. What does that mean for you? And ultimately it boils down to who am I? Who am I? It's exactly the same. This is my house. What am I going to let on the screen of my TV? What am I going to let through the speakers of my radio? And what am I going to let through the front door? We make that conscious decision. And we stop doing that in leadership so often.
What a great response. Thank you. My next question is, what role, in your opinion, does emotional intelligence play in effective leadership?
It's a good question. I think there's a slight misconception about emotional intelligence. Emotional intelligence, people often think, is about how we deal with the emotions of other people. You know, for example, I see Mary at the water cooler crying, and my emotional intelligence is about how do I keep Mary on task? How do I keep Mary feeling loved and hugged in the workplace? But how do I keep her working? That's the key thing, you know? So it's how I manage Mary's emotions. That's not emotional intelligence. Emotional intelligence is about what does Mary crying at the water cooler trigger in me? Do I feel frustration because here she's going to crying again? Do I feel anger because Mary's not being productive? Do I feel empathetic and give her a free day off? Emotional intelligence is what triggers in me in order for me to manage the environment in which I'm in. So when people say I'm emotionally intelligent, test them by pulling on some of their triggers. You know, I know if I say to my 9-year-old daughter, go and tidy your room, otherwise I'm going to take your device off you, I know what triggers that's going to give to her. Right? So if you think you're emotionally intelligent, trigger somebody and see what it does actually in you. Because we use emotional intelligence to gain the upper hand on people often. We use it inappropriately. I'm going to really motivate that person by giving them an ultimatum. And that'll make me feel powerful, make me feel like I'm leading, make me feel in control. That's why vulnerability in leadership is so difficult for people to tune into, because they don't know how to be wholesomely vulnerable. So emotional intelligence is generally, how do I behave in reaction to something? It's vital. Yeah.
What a great response. Let's now talk a few questions on transition to leadership roles, an area that you do a lot of work in. What challenges do first-time leaders commonly face, and how can they overcome these challenges?
Yeah, biggest issues are situation versus strategy. This is the understanding or the belief of the situation you're going into versus the actual strategy of the role you're going into.
Mm.
It's very interesting, isn't it, when people join an organization and they have this transition period or induction period or probation period, whatever organizations call it. And during that time, you discover huge amounts. You discover your budget isn't what you thought it was. You discover actually that the team isn't as big as you thought it was. You discover that your predecessor left this awful mess in some areas. So you spend a lot of time being thrown these sticks of dynamite at you. And at the end of that probation period or induction period, you look back at your job description and you go, I've done nothing on this job description. Why? Because the situation is very different to the strategy that I joined under. So what happens is we end up panic leading. We're firefighting, we're lurching from crisis to crisis, we're keeping the wolf from the door with no opportunity to have a bigger picture or a bigger strategy. That causes burnout, it causes disparate members of your team going off and doing their own things, but it's a really common issue. One of the things I recommend, if you have the opportunity when you're transitioning into a role, is look at what your production is. You know, whatever the organization does, whether it manufactures, whether it produces objects or schemes or designs, and see if you can have a period of suspending that outcome. Whatever the product is, see if you can say, right, I want 15 days where we're not going to look at productivity. I don't want an end goal. And I want to just use those 15 days to work out where I'm sitting in this role. Right? That's going to be vital. It gives you an opportunity to meet your team and your staff, gives you an opportunity to see what disasters are coming down the track, to see what the actual situation is versus the strategy. It gives you just a bit of breathing space. And I think that one of the things that people jump into leadership roles looking for are quick wins. And quick wins can be as damaging as no wins at all. So try and create that space initially would be my advice.
Well said. And, you know, a few minutes back, you were speaking about how much demand there is for mentoring and coaching in the world today. My question to you is, how important is mentorship or coaching for someone stepping into a leadership role?
I think it's vital. And I make a distinction between mentoring and coaching and consultancy. And mentoring, you know, to look at it very briefly, mentoring is walking beside somebody, allowing them to almost tap into your knowledge, your own experience, your own journey, your own cultural awareness. So when I mentor somebody, I'm mentoring them as walking beside them on that journey. When I'm coaching somebody, I'm actually drawing things out of them. I'm drawing perceptions out of them. I'm asking them questions that take them from one viewpoint to another. So the two roles are quite different. How important is it as you onboard into a leadership role? It's vital. Because until you learn about your own ability, inability, awareness, perceptions, bias, how on earth can you manage that of a diverse team? Leadership is not a standard. There's no manual to leadership, although people will tell you there is. There are no badges and accolades and caps and gowns that make you a good leader. What makes you a good leader is the ability to tap into, influence positively, and impact progressively the team in which you lead. So your first port of call actually has to be yourself. You know, people always say, don't blame the dog, blame the dog owner. And I think there's a lot of correct conception in that. Don't blame the team, blame the leader. So if you're going to lead, primarily, let's start by leading ourselves. My book, The Life I Lead, is about how you make habits in your life fully aware in your leadership. You know, how do I know when my wife or my partner is just not feeling on top of the world today? How do I know when my teenage child is feeling vulnerable or afraid? It's an instinct, it's intuition. How do I know that my dog, who doesn't talk to me, wants to go out into the garden for a wee? It's instinct and intuition. I use my third eye. And all I'm saying is make that connection in leadership. You know, learn about yourself, gain an intuition and an understanding of yourself, and then impact your team.
Well said. I'm going to now move to another section of our conversation, which is leadership and societal impact. Can you talk a little bit about the role of ethical leadership in today's business environment?
It's a really tough one, isn't it? Because I think not just within the UK or within Europe. I think globally, there are real conflicts of ethical leadership. And this isn't based on human rights necessarily. This isn't based on regimes and dictatorship. This is based purely on how do our citizens feel? How do we feel empowered and engaged? How do we feel motivated? How do we feel, you know, how do we live with morale? And we boil that down to tax, economics, employment records, how full our prisons are, how long the queues are at the NHS. And actually, leadership is a really tough thing when you're leading nations of people. Mm. And there are two things I try and encourage people to do in their own lives, which they should do looking at society. Mm. And one is to say, I play an active part in the leadership of my environment. Mm-hmm. Gone are the days when we can sit as individuals and observe society. Mm. You know, my father, who's 86, 87, was a member of a society, but society had this sort of path. You left school, you got a career, you earned enough money to provide for your family, you lived with that career, you retired at a certain age, and you sort of lived through this gentle environment of life. Mm. That doesn't work now. You know, we have identity crisis in gender. We have how people work in society. You know, how do I contribute to society? And what happens is we see a lot of people who feel, I don't need to contribute in a conformed way anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, how I work is so individual. My identity and my gender is so individual. My sexual preference is so individual. My family blend is so individual. There is no longer a norm, which makes leading this nation of individuals very, very difficult. Right. What's compounding that difficulty is people saying, I don't want to get involved in that.
Oh, amazing.
I don't want to get involved in that. Yeah. I'm not going to vote. Yeah.
Yeah. Great response. Thank you. And how can leaders ensure their actions positively impact both their organization and the wider community?
Very good question. There are two things that I encourage. If I'm working with a C-suite in an organization, one of the things I test is how far down the chain of command does that vision, that objective, that strategy go? If I sit with the MD or the board of trustees, I say, what's your vision? What's your objective? What's your strategy for 2024? And they tell me with great enthusiasm. And then you meet people in the organization, from C-suite right down to your canteen staff, your toilet cleaners, your people at the coalface, people who never go into the office and work from home. How far down the organization does that vision cascade? Mm-hmm. And that will tell you how impactful their leadership is. And I also test it the other way. The coalface of your workforce, give me the main concerns. Give me the top five concerns, pet hates, irritations in the organization, mm-hmm. and see how far up the organization that displeasure goes. Because often you get that back to the C-suite and they haven't got a clue. They have no idea. Mm. And that's because the transparency, the communication flow, the opportunity, the collaboration, it just isn't there. Mm. So if you're sat in your C-suite wondering, do my employees know the vision? Mm. Then get out onto the floor and start testing it.
Right, right. So Nicholas, I've got time for three more questions. My next question is, can you share a success story of a leader who you have helped to effectively transition into their role through your coaching? And of course, I don't want any names.
Sure. One of my favorite success stories was I was approached by a chap who had done a free course, which I do each year, and he'd bought the book, and he was transitioning into a national directorship. He had a scattered team of operators across the UK. And he stepped into this role, and within 3 months, he was drowning. He was drowning in a low morale. He was firefighting. He was traveling around the country. Mm. And I sat with him for 3 months, every week for 3 months, and worked with him. And all it took was the tiniest implementation of putting together a daily schedule that was cascaded effectively from him to his team. Mm. So instead of going to these operations around the UK and worrying about getting there, worrying about morale, not having any uniformity. We put together a system which allowed him to have a Zoom call every Monday, allowed him to put in processes that made that interaction so enjoyable that now he travels around the UK excited to meet his team, not frightened to meet his team. You know, his team invite him to things as opposed to hide things from him. So I loved the story because it was such a challenge, because he was sat in an office on his own in London with his team all over the UK. And we sort of brought together this disparate team of really tired, exhausted people into one mind and spirit, even though they were apart.
How amazing. Thank you. So two more questions. My next question is, what is one piece of advice you consistently find yourself giving to new leaders?
Believe it is possible. Believe it is possible. Whatever your vision is, whatever the ideal is, let me tell you, it is not based on the size of your budget. It is not based on the fact that your team work from home. It's not based on the fact that your team work internationally. It's based on one thing. You've got to start believing you can do it. Believe that you can change culture. Believe that you can inspire. Believe that you can influence. If you don't believe it, you will put in short, stopgap, mediocre, undiscussed issues. Believe you can do it would be my first bit of advice that I say to people. You don't believe the strategy, it will never happen.
Correct. Well said. And my last question to you, if I was to ask you to look at your crystal ball and look ahead, what do you see as the future of leadership in a rapidly evolving and changing world where there is technology, there is artificial intelligence, there is hybrid work, there is work from home, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, I think that it will become extraordinarily people focused and not operations or product focused. And I think you can look across the board, you know, leadership in its current state is not sustainable. A leader cannot juggle mental well-being, well-being, location, operation, productivity. It can't balance all of those. And I think what leadership will become is going to be very people-focused. People, there's this thirst for self-awareness, this thirst for self-confidence, this thirst for self-learning and betterment. And once that becomes a generational indigenous skill, leadership won't be about productivity. It'll be about productivity based on the fact of how we love our people.
Well said. Nicholas, on that note and your amazing piece of advice, believe it is possible. Thank you so much for speaking to me about your own amazing journey. I wish I'd met you when you were running the Victoria and Albert Museum. Thank you for talking to me about so many different aspects of leadership development, transition to leadership, leadership in society, and the impact leadership has to have. We didn't get a chance to talk about your book, but maybe some other time we'll speak about your book, The Life I Lead. Thank you again for speaking to me, and good luck to you.
Wish you all the best. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.